Welcome to the Reality Revolution. I'm your host, Brian Scott. Today we're finally going to introduce Ernest Holmes on the podcast. I've had many requests to read from Ernest Holmes, and Ernest Holmes is absolutely amazing. Just a lot of his writing is in short little bursts, and so I've struggled to find a way to make it fit into the podcast. And so what we're going to do today, we're going to read three of his booklets, and they're all amazing. Just to give you a little background on Ernest Holmes, he was an American New Thought writer, teacher, and leader. He was the founder of the spiritual movement known as religious science, part of the greater New Thought movement, whose spiritual philosophy is known as the science of the mind. His book, The Science of the Mind, is truly remarkable, and I highly recommend it. Essentially, he taught New Thought in a Christian context in his church. The primary teaching of New Thought is that physical form is created by a universal mind or God, which manifests or literally reflects the dominant belief system of all living persons. In his book, The Science of Mind, Holmes described this God force as a universal mind, spirit, intelligence that is the origin of everything. It is the first cause. It is God. The universal life and energy finds an outlet in and through all that is energized and through everything that lives. Holmes argued that human beings have access to the power of this universal mind by directing their thoughts, in particular their beliefs about the present or the future. And in his book, he described as follows: experience has taught us that the subjective tendency of this intelligent law of creative force may consciously be directed and definitively be used. And this is the greatest discovery of all time. Very much what we talk about. So there are three different booklets that he wrote that are very powerful before we get into the science of the mind at some point. And that's See Yourself as You Want to Be, Your Aladdin's Lamp, and Money, a Spiritual Idea. All three are great, and we're going to go through all of them. They all have sort of meditations and affirmations, treatments that you can use and deal with the same things we talk about on a regular basis on this podcast. And I just enjoy the way that Ernest Holmes talks about this stuff. Once again, he has a different way of describing techniques of visualization and a variety of different topics that we have already addressed. We begin with See Yourself as You Want to Be, written by Ernest Holmes. The technique of visualization. There is, in the universe, a spirit that is self-knowing and a law that is not self-knowing, but self-propelling, which obeys spirit. We are self-knowing centers in a law that has no volition other than to obey our impulses. We are ignorant of this, and consequently bring upon ourselves through a direct act of law all the experiences that we suffer. Should we completely change our mode of thinking, we would completely change our environment. We are today the sum total of all our thoughts and acts, the objectification of our subjective states of consciousness. Our subjective state of thought decides what is to happen to us objectively. Our subjective state of thought is constantly radiating into universal mental law the images of our entire belief in life. And from these images of unconscious thought spring all our outward conditions. The key then to success and happiness is the conscious control of thought and a continuous radiation of constructive thinking and acting. This key will unlock the treasure house of the infinite and reveal to us undreamed of opportunities and experiences. We have brought upon ourselves all our troubles through ignorance of the law, which of itself is always a law of liberty, which we have misused through misunderstanding the true meaning of life. We must reverse the entire process of our thinking and learn to think of ourselves only in terms of spiritual valuation, which alone is enduring and real. Visualization means to create a mental picture of ourselves as we would like to be. To hand this picture over to the universal law of execution and to believe implicitly that it will act. But our present ability to visualize depends upon our present state of thought. It is limited to previous experiences and impressions. By the act of visualization, we can bring into our experience only that which we can mentally image. And we can image only that which we know. Perhaps this is why Solomon said, "With all thy getting, get understanding." Plotinus said something to the effect that our work is always done better when we face spirit. Even though our back is turned to our work, Emerson tells us that a betterment in conditions always follows the divine influx. Jesus tells us to seek the upper kingdom first, and that all things will be added. All the great spiritual teachers have mentioned that we need to look for higher forms of thought if we wish to experience better things. By visualization, we can only bring into our experience something we presently know about. We cannot reach beyond our mental grasp, nor can we jump away from our own shadow. It is necessary, then, to find higher visions and broader vistas of thought if we are to transcend our previous experiences. This can be done only by letting the higher mind rule by conscious contact with greater reality. Visualization is always incomplete unless the thought is first impressed with the greater possibility and made receptive to the divine influx. Spirit is always ready to flow through our mentality, but we are individuals and must let it flow by the act of our self-choice. Deep within our subjective mentality are imprinted the memories of previous experiences. Hidden away in the inner recesses of thought, generally unknown to us, are the silent causes of our outward conditions. But the law is always acting, and we are ever perpetuating experiences that we no longer want to have. What we need is a new outlook upon life, a broader vision, a deeper realization. This can come only from the spirit that knows all things. The conscious use of law is for the purpose of neutralizing false images of thought and in their stead creating true ones. We must exchange the human for the nearly divine. We must learn to think as we feel God must think about us. Now we know that God is perfect and a complete unit. Consequently, if we would think as God thinks, we must do so from the basis of unity, the unity of good and the perfection of being. But we cannot think from the unity of good while we still believe in evil in any of its apparent forms, for clear thinking disavows evil and believes only in the good. It is useless to visualize unless we bear this in mind. God is one, not two. Unity, then, must be the basis of all our thinking. Goodness must be paramount if we are to visualize correctly and effectively. We are to believe, then, that our thought operates through a field that is unconditioned and absolute. If our thought is in alignment with reality, it will become powerful. This is more than holding thoughts and has nothing whatsoever to do with suggestion in any of its forms. God does not suggest. It knows, and its knowledge is law, and this law is perfect. There is no power in holding thoughts, but there is power in knowing the truth, and that truth acts through the law. The will is not used in visualization, but the imagination is used. The will enables us to imagine or image along the lines of our self-choice. Will holds out the mold. Imagination fills the concept with spiritual realization, and the law executes the deed. Right thinking straightens out our thought for the purpose of right perception. Right perception is God, and God is all. God operates by self-knowing. The law acts by the impulse and outpush of spirit. That vision, which is based upon harmony and unity, is complete and unconditioned. Spirit knows all things, and the law can do anything. By the conscious intelligence of the inner spirit, we set the law in motion for definite purposes, Any purpose that is constructive is legitimate and right. Spirit intends us to have and enjoy all things. We must feel and know that back of our word there is power that is greater than the apparent consciousness that sets it in motion. When we visualize, we must think in the absolute, perceive in the absolute, see in the absolute, and then let the law alone to execute itself. Visualization from this standpoint is a creative act that is never bothered by any existing condition or conditions. It is absolute because it is backed by an immutable law and power. Once we are certain that our whole thought is harmonious and unified with good, we may ask for what we want, and it shall be done unto us by the law. But it is dangerous to use this law unless we are absolutely certain of right visualization, for thoughts are things, and thoughts move in circles and will ultimately bring back to us exactly what we send out. We must each answer to ourselves, for ourselves, and all according to a perfect law. In visualizing, put the past entirely behind. Do not think of the future, but make your thought perceive the ever-present reality. Spirit knows no past and no future, and the law knows only to do. See yourself as you would like to be, but think of no person or persons in connection with your mental picture. Think of yourself as you would like to be, and calmly state that you are now in the position that you care to be in, that you are now doing the things you would like to be doing, that you now possess the things you want to possess. Look at your picture as you would view a landscape, mentally dwelling on this picture, trying to feel the reality of it, until you can sense that it is a reality. Then leave the entire picture for the law to work out for you, returning to your everyday affairs with perfect confidence that something is really taking place on the invisible side of your life, and that you will experience in outward form all your inner aspirations. The following is an example of self-visualization. Let go of everything. Clear your thought of every impression. Do not will or wish anything. In the silence of your own thought, feel that you are surrounded by an infinite spirit, that there is influx from the spirit flowing through you. Let the mind of the spirit be your mind and say, Infinite Spirit within me, which is God, all-knowing, all-wise, all-perfect one. There is no life apart from you, and you are that which I am. I am whole because you are whole. I am perfect because you are perfect. I know because you know. I am because you are. My word is the law unto itself. Through the one great law of perfect liberty and perfect action. At this point, visualize your desire, draw a complete picture of it in your thought, and realize it. Realize it now is your Aladdin's Lamp by Ernest Holmes. In my talk today, I'm comparing the mind and the genius that dwells in it to the genie in Aladdin's lamp. If someone were to ask you, did you know that you are a genius? Would you laugh at him or would you take him seriously? You will remember the story of Aladdin and his lamp, that when he rubbed his lamp and made a deep wish, then the genie would appear. Jesus said, there is a light that lighteth every man's path. But he added, if you put your light under a bushel, then no one can see it. It is this light, which is the light of God and the light of life, that is your light. The question is not whether there is a genius hidden at the center of your life, but whether or not you are rubbing your lamp so the genie can appear. How could all the deep wishes, hopes, and aspirations of your life be there unless it were possible for them to be fulfilled? God never makes mistakes, and God put them there. There is a power in the universe, and this power is available to everyone. It is the power that brought everything into being. Therefore, it is all power. It is not only all power, but it is all presence. It pervades everything, and it is at the very center of our own being. If you wish to use this power, you must believe that it actually is there and make yourself an instrument for its action. Aladdin had to rub his lamp before the genie appeared, and Jesus tells us that we have to believe before it can be done unto us. This implies that you can actually think yourself into a mental position, which makes it possible for the power to flow through you and out into the things you are doing. For instance, if you wish to be successful, rub your lamp with the idea of success in mind. See yourself as a success. Remove all fear and doubt, and you will have connected your desire with that power, which is this cause of everything. If you say to yourself, "There is one mind, that mind is God," you should also say, "That mind is my mind now. It is now guiding and directing me, causing me to know what to do and how to do it. This mind is your Aladdin's lamp, and the thoughts and ideas that come to you when you rub this lamp through faith and conviction are the genie which appear. The great genius of Jesus lay in the fact that he was not afraid to trust God, and because he trusted God, he believed in himself. We can well imagine that it must have taken years of patient trying to come to the place where he dared to command the wind and the wave to be still. And yet, as you carefully study what Jesus did, how he thought, and what he said, you will be amazed at his simplicity and childlike acceptance. For instance, he said, if you are praying for something, when you think about it, because of course you couldn't pray for it without thinking about it, try to accept in your own mind that it is already done unto you. It is the faith that it is your Aladdin's lamp. If Jesus had made this claim merely for himself and had said, "I am the only one who can do it," then here would be no hope for the rest of us. But Jesus actually said, "What I am doing, you can do also. You also have a light." He plainly taught that there is one life, one power, and one presence available to everyone. It takes a little imagination for us to appreciate the meaning of this. Perhaps imagination really is Aladdin's lamp. But Aladdin believed that when he rubbed his lamp, something would appear. The genie would spring into being for him and do his bidding. Well, Aladdin was a mythical figure, a character in a fairy story, and we read about him with keen delight because we feel we would like to be Aladdin. We wish we had a lamp that we could rub. We wished that there might be a genie who would appear at our command. Yes, Aladdin was a mythical figure, appealing to our imagination, pleasing our fancy, delighting us with the thought of limitless possibilities. But Jesus, the way shower, was not a mythological figure. He was a real person, and we cannot doubt that he was the greatest genius who ever lived. For so long a time, we have thought of his teaching being so far away from our personal experience, so separated from the realities of life, as though he were talking about some future good, something impossible to attain here and now. Although I had read the Bible more or less continually since I was a child, several years ago I got the idea that I would like to read the New Testament over again with this one thing in mind. Why not read the story of the life of Jesus just as though you were reading some other story? From the thought that such a man really lived, really said the things we read about, actually meant them, and did really prove his position in what he did. I became so interested that I spent all the time I could find for 2 years reading and thinking and trying to reinterpret everything Jesus said and did from this simple viewpoint. Here was a man who knew what he was talking about. He knew it because he was able to do it. The thing that really amazed me was the simplicity of his teaching, the complete directness of it. his intimate relationship with God, his inward feeling of the divine presence as a living reality in and through everything, and his complete conviction that there was a law of good that responded to his faith. It was this utter simplicity that amazed me. I was so completely convinced all over again that I actually wrote a book about it, which has recently been published. As a matter of fact, it was because of these 2 years devoted to this study that I happen to be talking to you today. I am completely convinced that there is a power within you, which you didn't put there, that you can use. A power for good that is available to everyone and is available right where you are today. Jesus did not say by and by. The one thing that made the deepest impression on me was that Jesus believed in the actual active presence of God in every man's life. And in no place did he ever infer that this power would not be available to you. Rather, he said, I am telling you about a presence that is real. I am telling you how to use a power that actually exists and is real right where you are. And so I am going to ask you to get out your lamp and rub it. Rub it with faith and conviction. Rub it with grateful acknowledgement and acceptance. Rub it with feeling and imagination. You need have no fear for the outcome. Your mind is but a conductor for a power that actually is. Your light is borrowed from a universal light. The wick of your individual lamp runs deep in the oil of a universal life. It draws its power from a limitless source, for God is all the power there is, all the presence there is, and all the life there is. Many of you will remember that when you were children, you used to trim oil lamps and polish the globe so that the light would shine brightly. Let's think of this other light in the same way. The wick must be trimmed, as Jesus said, keep your light trimmed and burning. The globe must be clear and transparent so that the rays of light can shine out into what you are doing. But the light itself and the oil which furnishes its glow is something life has already done for you. What you are to do is consciously to hook up your mind with the man inside you, God's good man, God's perfect man. Jesus said, it is not I, but the Father who dwelleth in me, he doeth the works. Robert Louis Stevenson spoke of his little mental brownies who do half of my work for me even when I am asleep, and in all human likelihood do the rest for me as well when I am wide awake. When you go to sleep, you can turn all your ideas over to the genius within. Rub your lamp of faith for a few moments and go to sleep knowing that the little genie will appear. And when you awake in the morning, ideas will be there. Seize them with enthusiasm and work on them with conviction. Now, some people have called this awakening the subconscious, and probably they are right. They say there is something inside you that through imagination can be stimulated into action, can work out all your problems even while you are asleep. I have known many an inventor who said his ideas came that way. I have known lots of writers who do this. I have known mathematicians whose problems are worked out while they are asleep. The experience is so common that many books have been written on. It has been called The Man Inside You and The Workshop of the Unconscious, but you and I are not particularly interested in what anything is called. Rather, we are interested in what it is, how it works, and what it does. Your whole mind, whether you call it conscious or subconscious, is merely an instrument of the spirit within you. It is the place where this ever-present spirit is focalized through you as a person, expressing itself as you, as an individual. Technical terms will not help us any. I noticed that in the life of Jesus, he just called it God within him. It was his terrific simplicity that has eluded us, and now gradually we are working back to its meaning, to the discovery that every man's life is hid with Christ in God, that there is a power and a presence at the center of your being that can be called forth into action for you. Somewhere within you is the correct answer to every problem in your life. Somewhere within you is the power to live. And somewhere within you is the faith to believe. You are Aladdin. God has already given you the light. The genie will spring forth at your command, and you can enter into the good you desire if you believe you can. Do you think this is too much to expect of life? Does it seem too wonderful to be true? Well, the first stream-driven boat to cross the Atlantic carried in her cabin a treatise explaining just why it was impossible for a boat to be powered by steam. And Jesus said, "I am come that they might have life, and that they might have it more abundantly." No, it is not too much for you to believe that he knew what he was talking about, and so Aladdin, don't be afraid to rub your lamp. This lamp is the gift of life to you. Accept and use it. Meditation. Let us take as the thought for our meditation today, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. In this passage, Jesus is referring to the light that is at the center of your being, because he says, "Let your light shine." Every man has this light. It comes from your Father in heaven, which is within you. In our prayer and meditation for today, let us see if we cannot become aware of this light and really let it shine. Let us be very simple but direct about this, completely believing that there is a light at the center of our being and that we are one with all the life there is. Let us shut every other thought from the mind for a few moments as we quietly, reverently, but joyously come into a complete acceptance of our union with good. And now, let us rub our Aladdin's lamp, taking the thought for today. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Believing that there is a light that lighteth every man's path, and being deeply convinced that this light is also at the center of my own being, I now affirm and accept that there is a power of good at my disposal, that I am immediately one with this power and all of its resources. I now affirm that divine intelligence guides me, and that I shall know what to do under every circumstance, that everything in my life is adjusted to harmony, to peace, and to goodness. I know that every idea will come to me which is necessary for complete success. I feel the presence of God as divine companionship closer to me than my very breath. I know that the power of good is with me always and with everyone else. And as I think of others, I am thinking of them also as being guided and directed, loved and guarded into right action, into joy, into peace and happiness, and into success. Money as a Spiritual Idea by Ernest Holmes. And in our final booklet, we get a discussion of money as a spiritual idea. Every time I talk on this subject, Holmes begins, "I begin with this. I have no gold brick to sell. There is no get-rich-quick scheme. I have nothing at all to sell to you. There are no secret doctrines that will tell you how to make a million in a month. While there is an exact science of gaining wealth, yet I will say in beginning that possibly none of you will ever prove it. Nevertheless, I will say that it is an exact law, a scientific and unfailing law. There is a law of perfect supply. To begin with, we must come to see that the supreme intelligence must, in creating man, have also made a way by which he could be provided for in harmony and in peace and without robbing any of that which belongs to them. Now, this way must be a natural way. It must be a natural law. Nature is always natural. Now, we are talking about money, as that is the evidence of supply. Money is the highest medium of exchange that the race has yet been able to produce. Jesus knew this and told his students to render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's. He knew that money was an idea and a necessary one to the needs of human life. So there is a law of success, and all who will can prove it. Success is not dependent on location. To begin with, does money depend upon location? Can it be made only in certain places? Let us see. In all places, people make money. In all places, there are some who are rich and some who are poor. Go to the smallest town as well as to the largest city, and it is just the same. Some are rich and some are poor. Success, then, does not depend on location. Is it the kind of business? No. There may be two men in the same kind of business, equally well situated. One will make money, and frequently the other will lose. Does it depend on education? No. Some very ignorant men make money. Does it depend on a man's circumstances? On a man's bringing up? No. Some of the wealthiest men in the world began with nothing. Success depends on law. Upon what does it depend? It must depend on a certain definite way of doing things. The man who succeeds must have succeeded through a certain method. The man who failed must have done entirely different. It must be a certain way of looking at it. There we get back into the spirit realm. There is a way which the Father hath provided by which we may demonstrate success. The way is there. I cannot go on the way for you. God cannot do that for you. You must walk the way yourself. Now, as Browning said, all's love, yet all's law. We are dealing with law, a mental and spiritual law. Now, law is not God. It is an attribute of God. So this law of success is not God, but it is an attribute of God. Man is given dominion over all laws, and when he comes to understand law, he becomes the master of it. Jesus always referred to the law and always complied with it. He so perfectly understood the law that he could, with a word, make it work for him. Now, the difference between Jesus and you and I is this. He could concentrate creation with his word. We do the same thing, only it takes us longer because of our unbelief. To illustrate, I once worked with a man who could add up several columns of figures at once and get a correct answer. I had to take the slower but nonetheless sure method of adding each column up separately. We both got the same answer, and we both did the same thing in getting it. One got it at once, the other got it by a slower method, but both were correct. One man can figure in his thought, the other has to use paper, but it is the same process. We plant corn and let it grow, and then harvest it and make bread from it. Jesus said the word and bread was made for him at once. Both methods are the same in one respect, for both are natural. Now, then, what is the natural law that we can use? It is something that we can come to understand and be sure of. Let us see if we can state it in simple and understandable words so that all may understand. There is a mental atmosphere all around us. It is mind, and it is intelligence. It knows, feels, hears, sees, and understands everything. It is universal that it is ever-present. It is always where we are. It is receptive, that is, it receives our thought. It has power to do anything, to produce anything, to create anything. It is a great, divine, natural medium and law. I'm not going to try to convince you today that this mind is a reality, for we have so often studied it. If you are spiritually developed enough, you will accept the fact and act upon it, and by so doing, you will most surely reap the benefit of one who will believe it. If you cannot as yet accept the fact, you will be the loser. It matters not who takes it for a fact and who does not take it for a fact. The law is there just the same. Happy is the man who can take it, for he shall reap the reward of the true son of his father. We are surrounded by this mind, and we can use it just as we use any other natural law. You ask, can we see, feel, hear, touch, taste, or smell it? I answer no. I ask about the law of gravitation. Can you touch, taste, hear, see, feel, or smell it? You answer no. We both must confess to a limited understanding of what the law really is, yet we both know that it exists. The things of the spirit and mind are not seen. The most sensible thing to do is to take all natural law for granted, and instead of arguing over it, find out how to use it and how to reap the benefits of our knowledge. We must have the same faith if we are to live, so why not have a little more faith and live just that much more? Now, while this mind is and works for all who will work it, to deal only with it as mind is to deal only in mental law. This means limitation, and it is our endeavor to overcome limitation, and this can only be done through the Spirit. This mental law is an attribute of the Spirit, and we will get the best results only as we operate upon it in the Spirit. Jesus simply said, "Have faith in the Father." He knew that would produce the required results. But if a thing is true, there is a way in which it is true, and this is the way. This mind is there to be used. It is a mind, and the only instrument of mind and the only tools of mind are thoughts. Therefore, we must look to thought to get our answer to the problem of success. The man who is a success is a man who, whether he knows it or not, is using natural law. I say whether he knows it or not, for we all are using this law all of the time. Every time we think, we are starting something, so to speak. That is, we are thinking into this mind, and it is doing the thing for us. Our word is our thought, so our word shall accomplish. Man is not the creator. Now, this word which we send out is going out into the creative mind. I say creative mind, for man does not create. He simply uses creation, and creative mind is going to take it up and is going to bring back to us the thing we have thought of. I will send out my word, and it will now return void. Now, we are using the law, and law is mind in action. So we are putting mind in action through the avenue of thought. Mental law is thought going out to produce a certain definite result. The Bible says the word or thought became flesh and dwelt among us. That is, the word or the thought became manifest to us. Thousands of people are today proving this to be true. Money, then, the same as all other things, is a spiritual idea. Where did this idea come from? You will ask, and some will say from the ground, but I will ask, where did this idea come from? You cannot answer unless you say spirit. So from spirit or mind all comes what we see. Jesus understood that man has dominion over all when he turned water into wine for the benefit of his friends. Jesus either did or he did not do this, and for us to say that he did not really do it would be to make of him a hypnotist, an ordinary magic worker of the East. No, this great man of sublime faith did not have to resort to such a thing as that. He knew that a man who has sought first the kingdom is given the power to do all things and has all things at his command. He knew that we are surrounded by this mind stuff and that we could use it as definitely as any other law. He said, "What I do, you can do also." Will we ever come to believe what he said? The method. How are we going to use this law, this thinking stuff, which is mind? We shall have to operate through mind, through intelligence, through our own thinking. Our thoughts are the instruments of mind. Therefore, the only thing we can operate on for money is thought. Thought that will come back to us as the thing sought. We operate by thinking. Thought is demonstrated when we have thought into this mind until we have been able to draw from it the thing desired. There is the ultimate method, the Christ way. We cannot all attain to that because we are not able to realize that we are infinite. Nevertheless, the way is there. But we can operate through scientific law. We may impress or register upon this all-surrounding mind an image, which is a thought of the thing we wish, just as you record on the phonographic plate your voice. the thought will return to us in the form we sent it out. As a man thinketh, so is he. What we should do is to consciously, persistently think that which we wish to have is ours. It must be just as right to have money as any other good. It is dishonoring God to not have money. Speaking for the father of the prodigal son, Jesus said, "Son, all that I have is thine." It is wrong, a terrible sin against our own nature and against the infinite which has created us, that we do not demonstrate success. Everybody wants success. The man who sits down anywhere perfectly satisfied deserves to be kicked out. There is eternal force, eternal evolution, but you must make up your mind what you want. You want the best. Not always in the form you imagine, but the best. My mind is always open, and often I get the thing in a more definite way than I planned because the law knows more than I do. We must trust it absolutely. Every time we think, we are grinding out a thought which is distinct and to a definite end. There is being created a living, moving, an actual thing, and setting itself adrift into the power which begins to act upon it. So this universal plastic thought takes up the impress of our thoughts, no matter what the thought may be. We are surrounded by this mental power through which creation becomes manifest to us. If we want money, we must think in such a way as to bring us money. We must think we have money. We must think positively. You cannot think two ways at once, slide up and down at the same time. There's no halfway position in truth. Truth is the most radical thing on earth. It is the opposite of a lie. So do not think you are going to demonstrate success if you're going to allow yourself to feel you can fail. Trusting the law to work for you. Failure is the thought that there is not enough for all. I know of a certain man who, while yet new in this way of thinking, lost all that he had. He went home and told his wife that she was never to say the word failure to him. He said, "There is no such word, and I never want it mentioned in this house. I am a success." He knew the law, and in a short time he was in business and now is a most prosperous man. And he said that all that he has got through his faith in the law. This man knew the law, and he was not afraid. He had faith that the God who made him also made a way for him to live, and he proved his faith by the signs following. This is the way. Think what you want and then trust the law to work for you. Suppose that you want to do a certain thing. You must make up your mind what it is that you want, and then you must believe in season and out of season. Know every day that the thing you wish is just at hand, waiting for your faith that it may be made manifest to you. Your faith is the channel through which the Spirit is to make the gift. Now, faith is an absolutely positive and definite way of thinking. It is thinking the truth in spite of all appearances. Truth is the most radical thing on earth. So do not listen to the persons who do not understand the law and who are always predicting some sort of failure. You now are using unseen law, and if you want it to work for you, don't listen to anyone. Just know, that is all. Just know. I live, move, and have my being in spirit abundance, perpetual harmony, and love. And so that is three booklets from Ernest Holmes. You will see some incredible similarities to many of the teachings that we've already gone through. Similar to Neville Goddard in the way that he discusses imagination and coming from the wish desired. Similar to U.S. Anderson in his discussion of the universal mind. U.S. Anderson does a great job of explaining how the universal mind exists and how it impresses upon us. And Ernest Holmes is talking about all of that using the teachings of Jesus. It's very powerful. These meditations can be used. And it's true. If we embrace this wonderful idea of learning how to properly think, then we embrace unlimited possibilities. you are Aladdin. I know that sounds cliche. I know you've heard it 100 times. One of the favorite stories for self-help authors and others in this field love to talk about the Aladdin's lamp. Well, it started with Ernest Holmes. It started with Aladdin. There is truth in that story. It is a story that calls up an archetype that is powerful and true. You can have whatever you wish. And this lamp doesn't just give you 3 wishes. It gives you whatever. But it gives you everything. So if you are thinking thoughts of lack, of disease or poverty, then it will give you that. My friend Damien from Ireland had mentioned how ridiculous the law of attraction is when people are in food lines and really struggling right now. And the truth is that this law can be a bastard. It can be really tough because our minds go down these dark roads all the time. And so this may sound repetitive. I just talk about this stuff all the time on my podcast, but there's a reason for that. It's important. Don't rest on your laurels. If you found success using this law, don't give up on it. It's an ongoing, continuous thing for the rest of your life. You are swimming in a pool of pure power, and every thought, every single thought that you think is a wish on the Aladdin's lamp. So we have 3 different discussions here that are pretty powerful. The last being a discussion of money as a spiritual idea. The first being see yourself as you want to be, which is seeing yourself as you want to be from that place. And then your Aladdin's lamp. They're all very powerful. And there's many more wonderful booklets by Ernest Holmes. And we will definitely return to Ernest Holmes. His writings are very specific to using this law in a particular way. And he has some great affirmations. We will return to this. I would love to get your impressions of Ernest Holmes. Tell me about your experiences with using his teachings. I know that many people that follow the podcast are big fans of Ernest Holmes' teachings. If there is a particular book, something that you would like for me to read, put it in the comments and I'll be reading it there. And I just want to send out to the universal mind my incredible gratitude and love for everybody that's listening to this video. And I just want you to know how much it means to me. And I'm imagining absolute bliss as you go out into the day with your lamp in hand, because you are Aladdin and you can have whatever you want. All things are possible. And now is the time to think that thought, to see yourself as you want to be. All episodes of The Reality Revolution can be found at therealityrevolution.com. And welcome to The Reality Revolution.